Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts for teens. These teen podcasts are by teens and for teens. They run the gamut from author readings and music performances to discussions and book reviews by the Teen Center advisors. These podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation with the help of the library's teen advisors. To learn more about our teen programs, including how to become a Teen Center advisor, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the library by volunteering or supporting its foundation, go to www.foundation.spl.org. The podcast you're about to hear was recorded in 2010.
We are the Teen Center Advisory Board, and we're doing this podcast about Teen Link. So why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Damon Arundel. I am the outreach specialist for the Teen Link program, which is a program of the King County Crisis Clinic.
So, my name is Kian, and I was wondering if you could tell us just a bit about Teen Link.
Okay. Well, to give you an overview of the Crisis Clinic, provides a lot of different services in general. There is the 24-hour crisis line, which a lot of adults tend to know about, anonymous, confidential, emergency-type situations when people really are in need and they want help, it's a safe place to call. There is the 211 program, which is a line that's specifically for information and referrals, so people want to know where the closest fire department is, or if they get kicked out of their homes, where can they go to get help. That program is set up to provide information and referrals to connect people to those resources. Then there is the Teen Link line. Teen Link essentially is a helpline. We refer to it as a helpline instead of a hotline because people tend to think that you have to be suicidal or in some huge emergency situation to call a hotline. Hotlines also tend to specialize, so domestic violence, dating violence, eating disorders, drugs and alcohol. Teen Link deals with everything. So if you had a crappy day at school and you want to vent about it, you can call Teen Link. If you're pissed off at your little brother because he grabbed something out of your closet, you can call Teen Link. If you're having fights with your parents, if you're dealing with a drug and alcohol issue, if you're worried about a friend, or you're dealing with something as heavy as suicide, you can call Teen Link for all of those reasons. Now, things that make Teen Link special is that it's specifically set up for teenagers. So that's one. Two, it's anonymous and confidential, which is not something that's typically available to folks your age. A lot of times when you guys go and talk to a teacher, for example, depending on what you talk about, the teacher may have to report that to your parents or have to go beyond just what you two have decided to talk about. Within Teen Link, you don't have that same restriction. You can talk about anything and know that what you say with us is going to stay with us. You don't have to give any information that you don't want to. So you can tell us your name if you want to, you don't have to. And beyond that, any sort of information that you give us is confidential. The other thing is that it's non-judgmental. By show of hands, how many of you guys typically, when you have a problem, talk to your friends about it? Okay. How many of you ever had your friends then tell someone else about what you told them? Okay. So for the folks who are listening, pretty much everybody raised their hand in response to that question. That's never going to happen with Teen Link. In a way, it's kind of like talking to your best friend, except you don't have to worry about your best friend thinking differently of you, or telling anybody else, or making fun of you, or telling you that you're weird, or silly, or stupid, which sometimes friends do. So it's like having that best friend, but having that best friend completely be focused on you. It's all about you, what you want, what you need, and what's best for you. So that's kind of Teen Link in a whole.
Okay. My name's Hannah, and I was just wondering what a typical call is about.
That is a question that every person who volunteers for Teen Link asks when they come in. There's no such thing. We get calls that deal with everything you can imagine. If you can imagine a youth going through a problem, we've gotten a call about it. I can tell you that a lot of times when people call in, the first couple minutes will definitely involve, so I've never called a place like this before, how does this work? So we'll get that sort of question. But almost every single call, no matter what it's about, kind of breaks down to relationships. Because it's not just the issue itself, but it's how it's affecting them and their friends, how it's affecting them and their parents, or things within their family. A lot of the calls revolve around relationships in some way, shape, or form. In most cases, I will also say that there isn't necessarily a quick fix or a simple solution to the problem. And that's one of the biggest issues that we deal with online, is that we're not about necessarily giving advice, because each of you have different problems and have different ways of dealing with them. So for me to say that I know best what's best for you is kind of ridiculous, especially if we've only been talking like 10 minutes. So a lot of what happens is there's a lot of us listening and helping folks to just talk out their problems and then figure out if they want to do something and what that's going to look like. How, if you're dealing with some problems with your parents, helping you to figure out how you might want to deal with that. Does that mean that you want to talk to your parents, or do you want to just let it slide for tonight? And if you're going to talk to your parents, what are you going to say? How are you going to say it? When are you going to say it? And we can help you to figure those things out.
Okay. Well, my name's Eli, and I was wondering about how many calls you get each night.
That in itself varies as well, but I would say our average right now is about 5 or 6. And how many of you, by a show of hands, thought that it would be a lot larger than that? There's also this idea that there are dozens and dozens and dozens of phone workers. Like, there's this huge room when you come into TeenLink, and there's crap loads of phone workers picking the phones, just ringing off the hook. One thing you have to be aware of is that TeenLink is a small program. We do a tremendous amount. We get over 1,200 calls per year. But within that, there's basically 2 phone workers on every single night who are taking the calls. And sometimes the phone doesn't ring at all. Sometimes the phone rings off the hook. Some of the calls last like a minute and a half. Hi, so what's this TeenLink thing? Okay, click. And then there are calls where the person may be on the phone with the phone worker for over an hour because whatever they're dealing with is really heavy. So within that, it creates a wide variety of the types of calls that we get. And as a result, there's also no such thing, again, as a typical night. But I would say the average is probably about 5 right now.
My name's Cole, and I was wondering, do you go through any kind of training, like the phone workers, and if so, like how much?
Oh, definitely. There is no way that we could just say, all right, you want to volunteer? Cool. Here's the phone, and if you get, you know, a suicide call, good luck on that. So there's a tremendous amount of training that the youth volunteers go through. And again, to clarify, the folks that answer the phones are called phone workers. They are volunteers for TeenLink, and every single one of them is between the ages of 15 and 20. So anytime someone calls TeenLink, they are guaranteed to be talking to another teenager. So in regards to the training, a lot of what we're doing is helping to build on the natural communication skills that you all already possess. It's not about being an expert in any particular subject or having been through specific experiences, but it's about knowing how to listen to someone. It's about learning how to not judge them or make assumptions about who they are or what they are or what they've been through, and trying to help them to feel supported, to help them to feel understood, and to help them feel valuable. Which is not an easy thing, because a lot of our society is very focused on how do you fix this. So if I'm having trouble with my parents, how do you fix that? How do you fix that? How do you fix that? What's the simplest answer? Well, in a lot of cases, again, it's never a simple answer. Well, if you're having problems with your parents, the simple fix is you should talk to your parents. But if it was that simple, you would have done it already. So there's something that's getting in the way. And through talking about it and us listening, we can kind of get to the root of what the issue is, then decide what folks want to do about it. So in regards to the training, right now it's about 55 hours long. It's a lot of training. But at the end of the training, you will feel a lot more comfortable about the idea of talking to someone who is thinking about suicide, someone who has cut themselves before, someone who is incredibly depressed, someone who might be feeling violent towards someone else, someone who is just feeling like crap because their best friend, you know, called them stupid, or, you know, just got dumped by their boyfriend or girlfriend, or someone who's questioning their sexuality. Like, all of those issues you get prepared for within TeenLink. And again, it's not about giving you the answers, it's about helping you to understand how to kind of react and deal with someone who's dealing with these things as well. How to be a good support, essentially.
Okay, I'm Deressa, and I was wondering, how do you guys, like, keep your cool when someone, like, when they're calling, they threaten suicide?
That's a really good question. First and foremost, it's okay to get a little bit freaked out. Because it's normal to feel responsible for another person. At the same time, that does not mean that myself or any of my volunteers are responsible for another person's actions, which is probably the hardest lesson to learn within dealing with someone who's thinking about suicide. Second thing is that the training is pretty in-depth when it comes to this sort of thing. And we have a very specific protocol and procedure policy that we follow when it comes to suicides. And it's kind of funny, after the training, a lot of the volunteers will say, actually, suicide calls aren't as scary as you might think because there's so many steps that you have to follow that it makes it a lot easier to figure out, whereas within a relationship call, you never know where it's going to go or what's going to happen. We have very specific steps that the youth have to follow when it comes to suicide calls, and that's not just for the safety of the caller, but also for the safety of the phone worker. With all of that said, it is perfectly natural for a volunteer to get scared when another person is talking about suicide. I would be really worried if one of my volunteers didn't get scared when somebody started talking about suicide. And actually hearing, if I was calling in, I'm talking to somebody about feeling like I want to end my life, and if they didn't have some reaction, it would be really hard for me to believe that they cared. But that's one of the ways that my volunteers show that they care, is by saying, wow, that's really scary to hear. But I'm going to keep talking to you, and I want to help you through this, so let's keep talking.
Okay, my name is Ogi, and I was wondering, what is your most memorable experience while working for TeenLink?
Oh goodness. Pretty much every training that I'm involved in is memorable in a lot of different ways. With each training, there's one specific volunteer who, for whatever reason, I identify with. And watching the moment happen when they're doing role plays, because role plays are our opportunity to practice out the skills, because it's one thing to talk and hypothesize about, okay, you should do this or you could do this in this particular situation, but then to actually practice with someone using these skills is a whole different ball of wax. So within the role play sessions that we do, and that actually makes up about half of the training, is practicing these skills. Within every single training, there's a point where a volunteer finally starts to get it. Like, the light bulb kind of clicks on and they stop sounding like they're a robot and trying to go through the motions of connecting with another person. And when they actually start relaxing and being themselves and just talking to the other person. And when that happens, it's typically really hard for me to not smile, even though this volunteer may be dealing with a suicide role play or a sexual assault role play, so heavy topics, and yet at the same time, I'm dealing with a tremendous amount of pride for the work and the transitions that they're making.
So I'm Margaret, and I was wondering if I could ask you a few questions.
Sure.
I thought of some more while you were talking.
Please do.
So, one was, on a scale of 1 to 10, how depressing is it?
That depends on the night and the calls. I would say we spend every night on the line, there are supervisors present, so the phone workers aren't just sitting in a room by themselves. There's always a supervisor present, and after every single call, we debrief. We talk about how things went, how they felt about it, and help them to get that stuff off their chest so that they can take on the next call and not carry what they just dealt with into the future call. So within that, the volunteers get a tremendous amount of support. So it might be sad for a little bit, but knowing that at the bare minimum, this person that called in had someone to listen to them is incredibly empowering. And knowing that if we hadn't been there, they probably wouldn't have had anybody to talk to or to have anybody tell them that they're still worth it, even though they feel like crap inside, or to tell them that they didn't deserve to be treated a particular way by someone. To know that we were able to do that is incredibly rewarding. So I would say there are moments where, you know, the line can be kind of depressing, but at the end of every night, I would say it's not depressing at all.
And does it ever get hard? You said that it's confidential and, like, so, you know, it's not like teachers where they might go and talk to someone about it. Does it ever get hard not to report something that someone said?
Well, the challenge, I mean, this is where it's actually kind of a gray area, because technically TeenLink is a reporting agency. But because we're confidential and anonymous, it becomes really difficult to report. So, for example, you might call in and say, so my dad's been hitting me at home. What exactly am I going to report? There is a young lady somewhere in the ether that is being abused by her parent. I have to have specific information to be able to report it, and you're the one in control of that information. So I could focus on being a detective and trying to trick you into telling me information, or I could focus on supporting you and helping you to make decisions for yourself. And it's, again, it's never really that simple. It's not as simple as just reporting it and things get better. Not to say that that's not a necessary reaction, but especially with teenagers, we get into a gray area of what exactly is going to happen if it does get reported. So our focus is more on how can I empower you to make healthy choices and safe choices for yourself in your particular situation. And in a lot of cases, the callers have either reported for themselves already, or they've been in the system, so things have already happened in a lot of cases, and it either hasn't worked out well, or it's made things worse. So our focus is still, how can I support you best to get through tonight?
And do you ever have people who call multiple times and, like, you form a relationship with them, or not really?
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen often, but it does happen from time to time. And we don't necessarily form we can't form individual relationships with them, because that, in a sense, creates dependency, and that's the last thing that we want to do. We are set up as a crisis intervention. We kind of follow the whole mode of crisis intervention, which means that we're not doing long-term therapy or anything along those lines. So as long as we are not your primary source of support, you can call us as much as you like. But if it's an ongoing problem, you know, if there's one major problem that you're dealing with, then we're probably going to encourage you to get help beyond us, because hearing from different people every single time that you call can get really chaotic. Even though you're still going to get support, it's not always going to be as consistent. And consistent support is what I think is probably best when it comes to ongoing problems.
I have just one more really quick question.
Sure.
It's kind of random, but
okay.
I don't know, it's just a morbid thought that popped in my mind. Have you ever had anyone, like, commit suicide on the phone?
Not at TeenLink.
Okay, that's cool. Good.
I'm not positive if that's happened on the crisis line. It's a scary thought, and it's one of the things that one of the reasons why we have policies and procedures in place to make sure that our volunteers aren't exposed to something like that. So, for example, during a suicide call, one of our procedures is asking if the person has the means available. So if a person, you know, has a razor blade or a knife or a gun and they're thinking about doing something, having that with them while they're talking to us automatically makes us unsafe. So if we're going to continue to talk, we're going to need them to move away from that or set it down or something along those lines, because it's not fair for one of my volunteers to be traumatized in that way. Even in the process of trying to help that person, it's not fair to say that one person is more important than the other. So if one of my volunteers is trying to help, then we need the caller to help us out a little bit as well.
I'm Georgia, and I'm thinking about doing Teen Link.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like there's a lot of downtime sometimes. Like, what are you allowed to do during that downtime?
Yeah, I got your computers. So Facebook is a big time sucker there. You also have another phone worker and a supervisor, so a lot of the downtime is us sitting around and talking and hanging out and sharing stories and supporting each other. Volunteers are not allowed to make use of the line because it wouldn't be confidential and anonymous. So a lot of nights, we talk with each other about what's going on for us. That way your supervisor is there to act as a support for you, the other volunteer is there to act as a support for you, and you essentially have two counselors there working with you.
Okay, so what are the times that where the phone workers, the team phone workers work?
The line is open 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. every night of the year. So the scheduling in itself is pretty flexible. Once you've gone through the training, every volunteer that's on the line will do two phone shifts a month. So that means, twice a month you will come in at 5:45 to our location and leave at 10 o'clock or whatever time the line itself actually closes. Sometimes we have calls that go a little bit later than 10 o'clock. And then we also have monthly in-services and outreach work that we do. So volunteers will do things like this, and some of you have talked about seeing Teen Link volunteers at fairs. That's the outreach work that they do as well.
I have one last sort of interesting question. Okay. Is there any sort of pattern to the number and type of calls you guys get per night?
I know for a fact, one of the aspects of the program that I did not talk about is our youth suicide prevention presentation. So some of you have talked about Teen Link coming into school. Teen Link will come into a number of different schools throughout King County and give presentations on suicide prevention. So talking to folks your age about the realities of suicide, not necessarily how people do it, but helping folks to understand why. How does a person get to the point of thinking about suicide in the first place? What are the warning signs? What can you look out for? And then finally, how can you help a friend if you start to notice those things? What steps can you take beyond just telling an adult? And there are a lot of things that, as a young person, that you can still do that can be really helpful and effective to help your friend through a really troubling time. So that's one big thing that's involved in the work itself.
So is there anything else you want to tell us about Teen Link?
Well, you all have received a little booklet. That's our Where to Turn for Teen guide. We print up about 45,000 of those every single year. It's basically like a little youth yellow pages. Teen Link also has a website. It's 866teenlink.org. The information is in those booklets. We're also on Facebook. We have a fan page, so please fan us or friend us or however you want to put it. And we also have a blog that is accessible through the Facebook as well. Beyond that, please tell your friends about Teen Link. Recognize that while suicide is one of the topics that has come up several times during this conversation, that's not all that we deal with. It's far from about 10% of our calls deal with suicide, so the other 90% cover everything. So if any of you are having just a crappy day and you're not sure who you can talk to about it, Teen Link is there. If you are worried about a friend and you're not sure how to help them and they're having a rough time, tell them to give us a call. If you're not sure exactly if this is the right place for you, give us a call and ask some questions of the phone workers and see how they might handle it and use that as your kind of your testing for it. Okay.
Do you have any questions for our team advisory board?
How did you guys get involved in this?
What?
to the teen center.
The advisory group.
Flyers.
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 Her friend told me about it.
Okay, but you guys see flyers for all sorts of different things every day. Why? I mean, why get involved in a library advisory group?
Community service.
Yes, get this big, big lettering. Get like 60 community service hours.
Because the library is awesome. I don't actually need any community service hours. Like, no, to be totally honest, I already have like way more than I need. So I mean, once I become a senior and like do the honors stuff, I need them. But I just do it because I like the library.
How many of you have been enjoying your experience? Awesome. And everybody raise their hands. I did kind of put you all on the spot since you're advisors are sitting here. But with that said, I mean, that's honestly what a lot of people end up coming to TeenLink for is, you know, they have some interest in it and they've heard about this was how they could get community service hours or their outreach hours or whatever sort of hours they needed to fulfill. One thing that's awesome about TeenLink specifically is that our requirement for volunteers is a 6-month commitment. But everybody that starts with us, in the 7.5 years that I've been with the program, everyone that has started with the program has stayed as long as they've been in the Seattle area or the greater Seattle area. I'm exaggerating a little bit. We've had a couple people that didn't stay that entire time, but most will stay 3-4 years. If they stay in the area for college, they'll continue until they age out of the program.
What is the age
out? 20. Yeah. On occasion, when we've had volunteer shortages, which we did have about 1.5 years ago, we would extend that age for volunteers who had been with the program for a little bit. But once a volunteer shortage was over, we brought it back down to 20.
Georgia has a question.
So once you age out of working for TeenLink, can you move on to the adult crisis clinic?
Mm-hmm. You definitely can.
And you don't need any more training for that?
Well, there is a bit more training involved. And the reason why is because we're different programs, and while we have similar ways of handling things, the crisis line is much more clinical, and you're going to deal with more severe issues in a lot of cases. So we handle things in different ways. Like, for example, on the crisis line, they will trace calls when they need to. TeenLink has a very strict no-trace policy, but that's a whole another conversation. And then beyond that, it's because of those necessary processes that requires that additional training.
How old were you when you first started volunteering for TeenLink?
Well, I don't volunteer. I'm a staff member. But I'm 35 now. I started with TeenLink in 2002. So I've been with the program a little over 7 years. Before I was with TeenLink, I actually learned how to do all of this stuff, crisis intervention, counseling type stuff, from a crisis center in Michigan. It was the second oldest crisis center in the country. And it was kind of funny. I was still in college. I was at Michigan State University, and this guy, I saw a flyer. You know, want to help people learn how to deal with crisis situations, etc. I saw a flyer, and I came to a meeting, and the training coordinator passed out a sheet, and it was like 65 hours over 2 weekends, which is like everybody in the room was like, "Oh my God!" And the training coordinator said to everybody, "I know this is a lot, but what would you do if you picked up the phone and the person on the other end said, 'I've got a gun to my head, what are you going to do about it?' At the end of our training, you will know how to handle that situation." I said, "I don't know how to handle a situation like that, but I really want to know now." And after the training, I was definitely capable of handling situations like that.
So it seems like the stuff that you can learn through your training through TeenLink is stuff that you can use like in regular life too.
You can use one out of every, looking at, you know, suicide statistics for one, all of you are going to have a friend at some point in time in your life who is dealing with depression, dealing with feelings of suicide. All of you are going to have situations, if you haven't had situations where you're dealing with a friend who's struggling with something, I think you're lying to yourselves. You're all dealing with friends who are going through things.
The skills,
or you're dealing with things yourselves. the skills that you learn within TeenLink and the crisis line in general, they're all about communication. They're all about learning how to listen to someone, but not just sit there and letting them talk and you sit silently, but actively listening, engaging with them to help them work through their problems. Those are skills that will help you in any situation. I use these skills every time I get interviewed for a job, and it works. So, these are things that every relationship that you have, you're going to use communication skills. And they help in romantic relationships because, guys, we have a tendency to have difficulty with listening. And that kind of goes across the board. Everybody can learn how to be a better listener. So knowing those skills and having a good handle on those skills is worthwhile for the rest of your life, not just for community service or for getting a good grade. But it can help in those situations as well.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you so much,
Dana. No problem. Thank you.
This podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your generous contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.